Hi, this is Bill Champlin, and you're listening to the Music Journeys Podcast.
Welcome to the Music Journeys Podcast. I'm Mike Foley. Thrilled to have Bill Champlin as our guest. The veteran musician has a wonderful new solo album titled Livin' for Love. You'll hear a bunch of samples from it, along with Champlin sharing how the songs came together and the deeply personal places they originate from. He'll also reflect on his time with Chicago, his incredibly talented son Will, his favorite musical moment involving B.B. King, and more. Some groovy selections and an emotional story and song in his Fast Five, so stick around for that at the end of the show. Bill Champlin, our featured guest on this edition of Music Journeys. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Bill Champlin. Here's some of my music journey.
Then he began to wonder why, and suddenly opened up his eyes and started to sing of love just to find it. He started to
Bill Champlin has been singing and making melodies for decades. From his 1960s band, Sons of Champlin, to his solo material, collaborations, and nearly 30 years with the band Chicago, Champlin has learned and experienced quite a bit along the way.
You know, I've always had a theory, and I think it's kind of proven itself to be right, at least in my world. If you practice your craft, sometimes art will come through. And the craft is stuff that you do. Art is stuff that uses you as a taxi cab, you know, as a way to get to the page. Somebody said, hey, do you like playing guitar or keyboards or singing better? And I said, it's all the same. It's all the same thing. Songwriting, performing, putting new strings on a guitar, it's all part of the same thing. And I love all of it. Well, the strings, not so much, but the rest of it I love a lot, you know. It's just one of those things. And I've always been one of those guys that's been way in there. Always try to keep being musical.
Between us we can see, oh, fly with me on a carpet made of love. High music we can play, love will show the way. Every day we'll be together.
Born in Oakland, California in 1947, Champlin quickly inherited a love of music.
Well, you know, my mother was a, you know, kind of a frustrated songwriter, piano player, singer, dancer, diver. I mean, she's just really a talented woman, crazier than a junkyard dog, but very talented woman. And she used to put, when I was a kid, she put me in the playpen and roll the pen under the piano and just play for hours. And that was kind of how I grew up.
To go.
Spawned from his first band, Opposite Six, Champlin formed Sons of Champlin, releasing the first of several albums in 1969.
Oh, the Sons were just, for me, it was a really great beginning of my arranging and lyrical career. I mean, I wrote some really, really cool lyrics for the time. The Suns ended up, I still play with them when I can. You know, it's not just the band feeling like a family, it's the band and the audience. And I got the bug. I always like recording, you know. And when I started recording, it was like, I think they had four tracks. So if you wanted a full album kind of song, you'd go generation, four track to four track, and then all of a sudden they started adding tracks and it just became easier and easier. Now with Pro Tools, you can have as many tracks as you want.
Champlin has been part of some historic tracks. He won 2 Grammys for co-writing After the Love Is Gone, which became a hit for Earth, Wind & Fire, and Turn Your Love Around by George Benson. He sang and helped write several of Chicago's hits in the 1980s and early 90s, when the band had the backing of producer David Foster. Livin' for Love from Imagine Records, which came out in January, marks Champlin's first true solo material in more than a decade.
Musically and lyrically, I'm into it. I love the lyrics on Living for Love. It's the first song that I wrote for the album. And then Tamara, my wife Tamara and I, we write a lot together. I was writing it and Tamara came in. She said, "What's that?" So I played a little bit of it for her and she said, "Oh, it's time for you to do a solo album. Enough of this, all this other stuff. You're really writing for your own voice. So do it, go for it." So I went, okay. And right around the time COVID-19 hit and we were all kind of locked down. So I kind of, well, this is kind of working. This is a good time to work on stuff. Then I found that loneliness was way too strong. But I couldn't stop. Till you came along to remind me. Loneliness and pride could only blind me. Just when I hit the wall, about to fall down on my knees, you bring the spark to light, the fire deep inside of me. Something about you came without you. Got my heart in your hands. You're my reason to believe. Oh. A handful of the songs are really pretty deep, pretty personal. I've read somewhere that if it isn't personal, it isn't art. And I can't remember who said it. I can't remember whether I even read it or heard it or something, but it stuck with me. You know, I had about a pretty bad year a couple of years back. I lost my older son. I had to deal with cancer for the whole year, dealing with all the surgery, radiation, chemo, all the plethora of crap you got to go through with that business, all of which is behind me at this point of the game. And you know, I kind of went, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put this out. Usually I kind of keep those back and go, people aren't going to understand that. People don't want to hear about that. People don't care. And I think people do. There's a song on there called Another Lie that's basically about my relationship with my older son before he passed away. Is anything still on your mind? I'd give anything to hear another lie. Nobody was an angel, you know what I mean? And Brad wasn't either. So it took me 2 years to write that song. I had to really kind of dig in to put it out, and I had to do it and still be honest about, you know, how his life really was, because he was a real serious pill freak for years, a long time. He just couldn't shake it, you know? hey, we all had our drug situations, and, you know, I did too, but I pretty much shook it in 1985, a long time ago. That's enough of that. Let's just leave all this stuff behind and go after and let music be the thing, you know? So it's an homage at some level, but still somewhat honest.
We're living on borrowed time. I don't want to count the tears that I've cried, because when forever arrives, we're always surprised. Got no place to run, no place to hide. My time is coming around the bend. I'm much closer.
I mean, I went through so many physical things there a couple of years ago, and I think I probably would have died had it not been for Tamara really staying on it, keeping me positive, keeping me going forward. This was really an ugly time. The cancer I had was really kind of bad, and I just realized, if you don't say thank you when you're alive, how are you going to say it afterwards? And that's kind of what my time is about. It was just sort of a thank you to Tamara, to all the people that have helped, all the people that I've known, all the people who have listened to my music. It's just, if you listen closely to it, that's sort of what it's about. Let everybody know you love them while you're here.
Music is the perfect path to love. And poetry belongs just because. You need it, been missing way too long. Could it be your music may be wrong? You're marching in the wrong parade, following the rules somebody made. When one or two Stevie songs would take you to where you belong.
Well, it's kind of an homage to Stevie Wonder, who's, you know, one of the all-time greats. And in terms of uplifting music, he's one of the greats of all time. Great singer, great pianist, great songwriter, great producer, great drummer. And I was just watching news on the TV, and I'm seeing everybody running around. Aside from the riots, I just heard a lot of people on the streets yelling, demands, I want this, I want that, at the top of their lungs. And I kind of went, what are we listening to? What music is out there that's going on? And I realize it's a lot of records with people that are yelling really loud. Maybe there's something wrong with the music. You know, step back a little bit. Listen to Marvin Gaye. What's going on? And Stevie Wonder's The Love's in Need of Love Today. You know, I mean, I guess somebody could say it was political. I don't think it's political. I think it was just the human condition is that of somebody looking to love. I mean, we, you know, I hate to sound like a San Francisco hippie, which I am, in a weird sort of way.
We see through the smoke and we're both hearing the call. Love lives on and on and on and on, surviving the right and the wrong. Some live with.
One thing I realized way early on is that every gig is a rehearsal for the next gig. You never hit that moment where you have an absolutely great set and you go, okay, I've done it, I'm done. Whereas you do in other things in life. But I just love it more than anything else. It's just given me something to wake up and be involved in. Somebody told me years ago that the first thing that goes to tape, this was when there was nothing but tape, the first thing that goes to tape when you're singing is who you are and how you feel, even when you're playing. After that, time, intonation, all the book learning stuff. But what you're feeling is what goes down. And we all have a lot of stuff inside of us, and musicians are really, really lucky in that they have a way to get catharsis. And that's really kind of what it's been all about for me. You know, music is an expression. And it's one that I'm happy to be involved in. That doesn't mean that I think I'm better than anybody or any of that kind of crap. I just do it because I got it. Music business has been going through a lot of what the lockdowns have done to other businesses has happened to music, you know, for the last 15, 20 years. I think ever since Napster, you know, ever since the whole downloading thing, I mean, it's really kind of hurt the music business in a lot of ways. There's not as much commerce as there used to be. And I find people are making albums out of their pockets instead of, you know, record companies and this kind of thing. And usually those records that people are making, they're making them because they love it. They say, oh, it's a singles world now. Just all I got to do is write one song and get it on YouTube or whatever. Which, okay, I understand. That's great. It's a good idea. I think there's a thing in making albums is, you know, one song leads to another. I'll go in and make an album. I'll have two or three songs. But while I'm doing that, I'm getting a momentum going. And the next thing you know, I'm just writing right off the top. You know, I used to watch David Foster, and he was just always had a good idea. He always had an idea of what, well, let's put something here. Let's do something here. And, you know, and sometimes you go, well, let's give it a 5-minute test. Well, that didn't work. I mean, he was smart enough to know, well, what worked and what didn't. And, you know, I mean, I'll always be totally grateful that I had that time working with that guy just to learn a lot. I mean, not that I'm copying David Foster because I don't have the piano chops to do so, but I understood something about being in a situation where you're always creative. A little harder with a band than it is with solo records.
Speaking of bands, Champlin also shared some thoughts on his time with Chicago.
The most fun I had with Chicago is when we weren't on the road, we got together to go bowling every Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock. And we had a ball just bowling. And I kind of look at that as being, now that was really a fun hang. That was such a fun thing. There were some great moments. There were some, you know, really big records that we were involved in. There were some amazingly long tours and stuff. But, I mean, at some point in the game, after a while, it was just becoming, I just didn't want to try to go to sleep with da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. You know, I didn't want to hear that when I was trying to go to sleep. It was always the last song of the set. I was just getting less and less happy with it, and they were aware of it, and they just finally said, all right, let's get somebody else. And they were probably right on. It was right on, you know, at some level, it was maybe the best thing that ever happened to me because I got back to doing new music. Their move was, at some point of the game, was to try to sound exactly like their original records. And I wasn't there for their original records. So, you know, it just, you know, and I've always been one that says, man, even after a record's out, I think if you come up with a good arrangement idea or some way to make it sound a little different, why not? You know? And that's where the ideology of what to do with a band. I mean, every successful band is pretty much a prisoner of their own success. And Chicago is no different.
Now, I got to follow up on the bowling. Was that with Cetera or was that with the Chef era?
That was the Cetera era. Peter was a good bowler. Danny was a really good bowler, Danny Serafin. I couldn't pick up a bowling ball. Now my back is just not happening. I wasn't that good at it, but I'm still hanging out with a guy. It was just a great hang, and there was not a whole lot of, we got to get a hit, you know? And it wasn't in a boardroom. It was in a bowling alley. And it felt more like a band when we were bowling than it did when we were playing, at least later on. For the first couple of years, first maybe 3 years when Peter was still in the band, we kind of had a ball playing. We were cruising right along, had monitors on the stage. We weren't using in-ears. We weren't using click tracks. We weren't using all that craziness. So sometimes you get too modern, you lose sight of what really makes it go. But that's enough of that. I had a good run with those guys, and it's they're still up and running. I got great guys working for them.
Former Chicago member Jason Scheff, who replaced Peter Cetera, joins Champlin for a song on the new album called Show Me. Champlin also referenced Danny Serafin, Chicago's original drummer and co-founder. The two reunited in 2013 for Serafin's California Transit Authority. Prior to finishing third on season 5 of The Voice, Champlin's son Will sang a few songs on that Sacred Ground release, including the title track with Dad Bill on background vocals. When did you know that he might have some special gifts musically?
I knew it when he was 5 years old. He didn't know it until he was a little older. I took him to, neighborhood piano teachers. You know, he learned the basics. He learned the fingering for all the scales, up and down, both hands, all that, but was just bored to tears. And at some point in the game, actually, Jason gave me a phone number of Kerry Trotter, great jazz player. Insanely great teacher. When I got Will with Terry, I mean, within a month, he was playing Bill Evans stuff. And he was like, really? I said, whoa. And it just goes to show you, a teacher that just kind of does the thing is one thing. A teacher that really gets you excited about it and going forward is another altogether. And Terry did that for Will. And then he went to Berklee for 4 years at Berklee College of Music in Boston and tore that up. Really well. I mean, and then it's right after he did that stuff for Danny, he got on The Voice, TV show The Voice, got all the way into the finals. It was a cool thing. It was kind of a cool thing to do. He had a ball doing it. And it was kind of fun watching that happen. He was the spoiler every week, you know.
Champlin also shared his own favorite musical moment.
Years ago, the Sons were playing a gig at Shrine Auditorium, and it was Yardbirds, B.B. King, and the Sons. And BB was going to use our Hammond organ for his set. But right after our first set, it blew a fuse. So we sent somebody out to buy a fuse, which was easy enough to do. But he needed to go on stage and didn't have his organ player was playing bass pedals on the organ. And the promoter came up to our dressing room and said, BB needs a bass player. And my bass player went to get his, I think he had an Ampeg fretless. He went to get his bass and I went over and said, Al, do you know B.B. King? No. Have you ever heard a B.B. King song? He said, no. I said, give me that. So I went down and played a set on bass with B.B. King. And to me, it's one of the biggest moments of my musical life. It was just such a groove. I learned more about the shuffle in that 1 hour than I have ever, just playing with Sonny Freeman, the drummer. And his band was just organ player, two horns, a drummer, and him. And boy, what a great singer. What a great guitar player. What a sweet man he was. It was just to this day. I mean, and that was in 1967, 68, something like that. To this day, it's still just a giant moment in my life.
Baby!
I think, you know, if we're all talking about 6 foot social distancing, unless you're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you can't reach that far with your hands to touch people. The only thing that can do it is music. That's really all we got at this point in the game, is I just want people to feel something. At least I feel something, so I like to share it. And that's kind of what the record's about.
Bill Champlin's latest release, Livin' for Love, can be found on all digital platforms. CD copies can be purchased at BillChamplin.com. Up next will likely be a solo record for Champlin's wife, Tamra. So we're already looking forward to hearing that and possibly taking a music journey with her. We had one last bit of fun with Bill Champlin in the Fast Five. Here we go.
What? I'm up for it, all of it.
Hey, all right. Okay, here we go. First song that you can remember hearing that you loved.
Ooh. That goes back really, really far, but I'll tell you the one that and I remember where I was driving when I heard it was Walk on the Wild Side, Part 2 by Jimmy Smith. When I heard that organ, oh, what is that? I gotta get that. I mean, I started pulling people's weeds, doing anything I could to make enough money to get a Hammond organ. So I just remember where I was driving with my mom, was right near the high school in Mill Valley. I just went, Mom, pull over. What is that? She's like, I think it's an organ. I'm not really sure. It was pretty crazy. So I just remember that as being a really big moment.
Wonderful. How about the song that makes you feel the most nostalgic or reflective, sparks memories for you?
Probably What I Say by Ray Charles. I was really young when the first time I heard it, but I went, I don't know what this is, but I want to go there. I just really loved it. And that was one of the first times I heard Ray Charles. At first, I just thought the Wurlitzer piano sounded so good. And then I started hearing him sing. I just went, oh, great. This is, you know, and anytime I hear that, I kind of go back to that.
That's great. How about the go-to song for dancing or, you know, a tune that you hear and you just can't sit still when you hear it?
Believe it or not, Jody Watley's I'm Looking for a New Love. I'm looking for a new love, baby.
A new love. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm looking for a new love, baby. A new love. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm looking for a new love, baby. A new love.
I mean, I was just driving one day and they came on. It was like an oldie but a goodie kind of thing. And I just realized this pocket is ridiculous. It's just great. And then anything James Brown ever did. The whole James Brown Live at the Apollo, the first Live at the Apollo album, life-changing.
That's a great selection. How about the song that makes you feel like working out or motivates you to do something that maybe you don't feel like doing?
That's interesting. I Wish, Stevie Wonder. It's such a great groove. I mean, there were two drummers on the record, Stevie and a guy named Raymond Pound. And the groove on it is just hard to doze off when that thing's going on. That thing's really screaming, really beautiful. there's the telephone that has nothing but that's the phone that has nothing but people trying to sell you something. Oh, no. I don't listen to it.
Yeah. That sounded like an old school phone.
Yeah, it's my house phone. It's like all of the telemarketers have got that number. You know, forget about it. Maybe two people use that number to call me, and I always tell them, call my cell because this thing, I'm rare chance of me answering it. You know what I mean?
Okay, last one, a song that lifts you up when you're feeling down.
You know, I think just, you know, any different songs at some level could do that. But I'll tell you, there was a story where in 1998, my father passed away. I couldn't get a plane ticket to go see him the night before. And so, you know, I was about to get on the airplane and my stepbrother called and said, it's too late, man. He's gone. And I went, okay. And I was just kind of squirrely for a couple of weeks. You know, I wasn't really crying. I wasn't really grieving. None of that was going on. I was just kind of squirrely and biting people's heads off. And I was just kind of ugly for a couple of weeks. And then I was driving and Mike and the Mechanics, The Living Years came on. And I guess Mike Rutherford wrote this about his father.
I wasn't there that morning when my father passed away. Didn't get to tell him all the things I had to say. Think I caught his spirit later that same year. I'm sure I heard his echo in my baby's newborn tears. I just wish I could have told him in the living years. So say it, say it, say it.
And the minute I heard it, finally the thing that broke through. And then luckily I was close to home. I mean, the disc jockey, it was an older tune. He said, here's one, you got to hear this again. It's not on the charts right now, but just listen to this song. And I said, okay, what is it? And it was that song. And first of all, Paul Carrick's singing it, and that guy can sing Time, News, and Weather and make it work. He's a great singer. Oh, my God, it just got me. Just reached inside my chest and yanked my heart right out. And I pulled into my driveway into the carport, and I was just in the car crying for 3 hours. That song, every time I hear it, it just brings a tear. It's just a beautiful piece. It was a great, great thing that Mike wrote about his dad. I don't know Mike Rutherford, but he wrote one of the best songs ever written for my money.
My thanks to Bill Champlin for his time and his music. I'm Mike Foley. Talk to you again on the next Music Journey.